Good afternoon. This is Michael Thiemann. I'm your host today for the OpenSource.com Open Your World Forum, and I'm delighted to be bringing you the final segment of our day. If you've been with us all day, you've heard some really great commentary from business leaders, educational folks, community members, musicians, CIOs, and even lawyers. But at this session right now, we're going to shift gears a little bit and talk about Open Source for America. We have as co-presenters Jeremy Allison and Terry Molini. Jeremy Allison is a Linux evangelist at Google. He's a co-founder and one of the lead developers on the Samba project. And Terry Molini is a public / investor relations consultant with Init Marketing, the open source marketing agency. She worked with Sun Microsystems for more than 10 years and serves as a public relations manager there. But Open Source for America is finally now providing the very, very important function of allowing businesses to come together and have their voices heard in Washington. And I'm looking forward to hearing from Jeremy and Terry and also adding my two cents on the history and the status and the future of Open Source for America. So, Terry, I'll turn it over to you, and let's hear what you have to say.
Thank you, Michael. I'm looking forward to having some good questions here during the conversation that we are hosting here today. I have wanted to start by shedding some light on what Open Source for America is. If we could go to the next slide, who we are, that would be great. So Open Source for America is a coalition of companies and individuals to serve as a centralized advocate to encourage the broader U.S. federal government support of and participation in open source technologies. So what does this mean to our audience is that Open Source for America is important because it is a collective. It's a community effort that is addressing the very high end, the policy issues for open source with open source adoption within the federal government. We feel that open source is and should be a tremendous resource to the government, and our goal here is we want to raise the federal government's understanding around open source and its benefits. And to get there, we're working to centralize our efforts throughout the open source community to greater expand the government's use of open source technologies. Next slide, please. Organizational facts. We started out in early 2009. We launched our organization in July during the OSCON event that was taking place in San Jose, California. And what started all of this is the new administration in Washington brought with it an unprecedented commitment to transparency. It started with the appointment of Vivek Kundra, the first chief information officer, and then shortly thereafter, Anish Chopra was named as the chief technology officer. When those individuals came on board, it became very apparent that the administration's commitment to openness would provide a opportunity for technologies and organizations to participate. One of the first things that the administration did was to issue an open government directive, and this required the federal agencies to produce open government plans. And when that became public, Open Source for America offered the administration our help. And that was to set up a set of guidelines to help in the process of these for the federal agencies to follow. So if we could go on to our next slide around our founding members. We really represent a wide variety of interests, all unified to meet the open source needs of the government. Our organization started out with 70 founding members, and we are now about 1,300 members strong. The folks that are involved in Open Source for America are key players in the community. What that means is we've got CEOs, we've got mid-level executives, we have individual developers, and so, you know, we are really encouraging everyone to check out Open Source for America. So if you could just go to opensourceforamerica.org, look and see what we've got, a lot of working groups and things of that nature. But let me go into a little bit more around our mission. If we could take the next slide, please, that'd be great. Our mission is to educate and encourage and act as advocates to effectively promote the use of open source technologies. So the federal, what we think is that the federal decision makers need to really understand the benefits behind open source. And that includes, you know, what does it mean around cost? What types of choices do these folks have? And more importantly, you know, how is this all fitting into the ever-growing issues around security? We believe these will be addressed later in the our discussion. So what we're not doing, Open Source for America, is asking for preferential treatment. What we really are doing is looking to bring the awareness to the table. We're looking at, you know, wanting equal consideration, especially in the procurement process. So what can we do? And let me go on to, if we could go to the next slide, the activities. Effective government outreach requires a targeted messaging strategy, and we at Open Source for America are committed to creating these targeted materials for our organization. What's important about this? What we think was really important about our organization is the centralized nature. We believe it allows the open source community to cultivate relationships with key players better than individual efforts alone. We also think that Open Source for America is all about the dialogue, not a monologue between its members. We believe that, you know, if we are able to coordinate better, we can help really present the case as Open Source for America to be considered a thought leader. And we really intend to bring open source advocates and federal decision makers together through organized events. We also are looking to provide a reference library for other people interested in deploying open source projects within the federal government. So what we're needing from the community and our members is, you know, help us by sending us the, you know, participate, sign up, register for opensourceforamerica.org. There's lots of projects out there, work groups, and we're building out more and more functionality onto our infrastructure. And what we're really looking for are case studies. So to provide this reference library, what we are going to need are project names, sponsors of those projects, and which organizations within the federal government are deploying open source. We believe this will very much help other organizations to be able to leverage the work that is being done across the board. And so with that, I'm going to hand it on over to Jeremy Allison. And if you could go ahead and change the slide, I'll go ahead and hand it to him.
Thank you very much, Terry, and thanks for the introduction, Michael. So please feel free to ask questions during the presentation. We're happy to take any questions and answer anything you might want to ask. So I'm probably preaching to the choir on this, but the way I like to present open source to people is that open source is essentially the scientific method as applied to developing software. And I've, along with Michael, we've both been developing open source software this way for a very long time. And I think both of us also have a background in proprietary software development. And I don't want to speak for Michael, but I much prefer the open method of developing software that we do in open source. So we have the ability, when you release the code, to get peer review. The process is completely transparent, especially in my own project. We release very early and very often. And the code is available under licenses that make it freely available under the open source definitions. So just like science is best done in the open and not sort of done behind closed doors, we think software development is exactly the same, is done in exactly the same way. And I'm hoping that Open Source for America will help the U.S. government understand and the agencies understand the benefits that they will get by having a level playing field for all software development. Because historically, the government has sort of preferred procuring from proprietary vendors. So if we can...
Jeremy, yeah? let me take your invitation to sort of jump in with a little bit of commentary and tie together what Terry said and what you just said with my own experiences. And that is that I've had the privilege of going and giving briefings to IT and ICT education and finance ministers in many different countries. And one of the things that I noticed the first time we would make contact at a very high level, I remember a very specific case in Ireland where I was presenting some of the same benefits and philosophical underpinnings that you articulated, and I was, on behalf of Red Hat, trying to educate their federal government on the choices that that open source software presented. And at the end of 45 minutes, the guy looked at me and was pretty much dumbfounded, and I said, you know, what's wrong? And he basically said, you didn't sound anything like what I expected you to sound like. And I said, oh, why is that? And they said, he essentially said in code, well, you know, the other guy said you'd be absolutely fat's crazy. And the point that you just made, which is such a very important point to make, is that most of our public officials only know what they are told. And when there is not a voice telling them our story, they simply don't know it. And the absence of that information leads to an opportunity for the other side to then start filling in, you know, what terrible things we might do to kittens and puppies, you know, when nobody is looking. And with the points that that you have made and the points that you're about to make, it becomes so much more logical why it is that we have a point of view about software quality and how to do things. And so to sort of reinforce what Terry was also saying, it is absolutely vital for there to be a known, trusted voice that is telling the story to the folks as they rotate through office, as they rotate through appointments, and that really is what Open Source for America is doing. But let me let you continue on with some of the meritocracy of open source. But it seemed to me a relevant thing to just point out. To connect these two dots.
Yeah, thanks very much, Michael. I appreciate that. Can we go to the next slide, please? Don't think we've moved. Ah, there we go. Thanks. Yeah, so why is Google a member of Open Source for America? Why did we join? Why do we back Open Source for America? Well, as Michael pointed out, prior to Open Source for America, the government really only heard one side of the development story. And one thing that I think not many people realize is that Google itself is a massive consumer and producer of open source software. I'm actually inside Google's open source programs office, which is headed by my boss, Chris DiMona. And our mission inside Google is to make it easy for Google to use open source software developed by other people and to release open source software that we ourselves develop internally, like, for instance, the variant of Linux that we produce, which is the Android system, the Chrome OS system that we're producing, the Chrome browser, and many other things that we release. I don't think I can actually say the exact percentage, but a very large percentage of Google software actually comes from open source. In fact, I think Chris has said in the past that Google really wouldn't exist without the open source community and open source software development. So to sort of reinforce that, that essentially means that the amount of economic activity, because Google is now not a small company anymore, the amount of economic activity that open source can generate and benefit an economy is enormous. But it's you can only do that if open source essentially is on a level playing field with proprietary software, is not sort of made illegal or targeted as a, you know, as a subversive way of doing software development. So there's some great benefits that you get using open source. And I'm going to go over them here on this slide. So first of all, you get choice. One of the wonderful things about released open source software and projects is that they're no longer really owned or forced to be maintained by the people who created them. Someone else can take that software. And for example, Michael's company Red Hat, one of the components of their operating system is my own project, Samba, which is created by a bunch of people around the world in the open source fashion. Michael's company is able to take that, resell it as part of the product. And many other companies do so. So it gives you an immense amount of choice in terms of vendors that you can use to support various products that are based on open source. And of course, when you have multiple people who can support a product and compete, then you tend to get benefits with cost as well. And that's the second point. When you have multiple suppliers who are able to maintain and extend the same software competing with each other, you tend to get much better value for money. And I think you can see that with many of the open source products. One thing that's very important to realize, which is a criticism often pointed at open source software, is saying that essentially it's free and therefore no one can make money out of it. And that's just absolutely not true. As I pointed out, Google and Red Hat are two companies that really wouldn't exist without open source software. And the economic benefit it brings is great. And, you know, not all of our products are free. So there's a cost advantage to it, but it's not. It doesn't drive the cost of products down to zero. The other point about open source software is the reliability. And that comes from essentially the scientific method, as I've mentioned before, as applied to software. Just like say, building a bridge or any other large physical engineering effort, you expect the blueprints to be public and to be analyzed and there to be methods of checking that the software, that the product or the software does what it says it will do. And the peer review aspects of open source software and the fact that anyone who's using it is able to examine it themselves to make sure it does what it's supposed to do is a very great advantage to that development method. And that brings us on to the security issue. So one of the this is often criticized with open source software. I think it's usually a criticism that's leveled by people who don't understand the process. And the criticism is normally, well, this stuff is freely out there. Anyone can take it, modify it. You know, how do you stop malevolent people putting backdoors in the code, making holes in it, etc.? And the reason that doesn't happen is because the actual source code repositories where the master, essentially the master tapes, as it were, or the master repositories where the software is created from are extremely tightly controlled. So just talking about my own project, Samba, there are very, very few people in the world who actually have the ability to change that code. Anyone can see it, anyone can propose changes, but the code that goes in is absolutely and utterly thoroughly peer-reviewed and is checked by security teams from all the vendors who ship it. There's an interesting project that was recently done by the Department of Homeland Security to pay a vendor, Coverity, to actually run a static, what's called a static code analyzer, over a lot of open source projects. My own project was one of them, and it found a lot of bugs. We fixed a lot of bugs, and it's enabled us to essentially declare a level of quality and security in our code that we wouldn't have been able to do without it being open and being able to have been reviewed publicly by third-party vendors. Finally, deployment. Because a lot of the software is freely available, even though it's often incorporated into commercial products, what it allows you to do is it allows you to prototype and test things very, very quickly and easily. So if you want to find out if something is going to be suitable for your agency or within government, it's so long as you have the ability to download and test things, so long as you're not prohibited from doing this by mandates, you can actually set up test environments and prototype things extremely quickly with open source software. Rather than having to go through purchasing decisions, it's pretty easy to download and test it. And then, of course, you know, before you wouldn't put something like that into production, but it allows you to get experience with it and learn how to adopt it. And then at that point, you know, you go the traditional route and do a procurement mechanism to actually deploy it in practice. Yes, I think that's kind of gone through everything on the slide. So if we want to go over to the next slide, and without any further questions, I think I'll hand that back to Terry, because this is back to talking about the federal government.
Okay, sorry about that. I put it on mute so I wouldn't make any noise on this end. So some of the work that Open Source for America has been very active in is working with the various organizations. So let me just give a little rundown on this. So in 2004, the Office of Management and Budget issued a memo mandating the same consideration criteria be used for open source as commercial counterparts in the procurement process. That's what the OMB memorandum M04-16 was all about. And then again, in 2009, the DOD issued a memorandum requesting it's called the Clarifying Guidance Regarding Open Source Software. And what that was the DOD issued a memo outlining the many benefits of open source software and affirming that the DOD policy does not discourage its use. And that was something that had been very much misunderstood by a lot of the various agencies, was that the policy was to discourage the use of open source technologies, when in fact that was quite the opposite of the case. And those are areas where Open Source for America is working with our partners, our community members, and with the agencies to really help get that message out. And that's so what we are seeing as the result is the adoption of open source software in almost every federal agency.
Terry, can I add something to that?
Yes, sir.
So, one of the sources of confusion, which I talked a little bit in a previous session, was that there's a false dichotomy between commercial and open source. There's a true dichotomy between open source and proprietary. Those are sort of two opposites. Both can be commercial. And the confusion in the government may strike us all as bizarre, and yet I think 2 days ago, it was reported that in a different government, the Romanian tax agency has come out with a statement that any computer bought without an operating system you know, is obviously being used for illegal purposes, because anybody who doesn't pay for software is a criminal. And it completely misses the whole point of what the free software movement, you know, what Linux is trying to do, which is to provide a community resource that is freely available. And although nothing like that has directly come to pass yet, where every American citizen is a suspected criminal until they can prove that they've purchased, you know, from a proprietary vendor, the one operating system that will run on that computer, according to the government, there has been such confusion rampant throughout many, many agencies. And you're absolutely right that a lot of work has to be done to express to people the idea that free redistribution does not preclude either the existence or the importance of commercial support for such systems.
Exactly. Thank you. Jeremy, do you have anything else to add in that respect?
No, I mean, I think Michael put it extremely well. It is a confusion that if you're not used to this world or this method of development, it's kind of easy to put open source software into the non-commercial bracket, and that's really a mistake. As Michael said, nothing could be further from the truth. There is an immense amount of commercial activity around open source software. And, you know, if Open Source for America can help the government understand that if they put restrictions or have any penalties around open source software, they're actually hurting a lot of economic activity that's going on and helping the economy be a lot more productive.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. If we could move to some of our case studies, the Department of Veterans Affairs. What we tried to do here is to include a few case studies that are really helping some of these other organizations, like I mentioned earlier, see what is being taking place within other agencies. Again, this what we're trying to do is to build out our library of resources for other agencies. So one of these we'll highlight here is the Department of Veterans Affairs. The Veterans Affairs provides an interesting case study in open source where it's used to cut costs and ultimately save lives. There are estimates stated that one in five medical tests were unnecessary and that some of the repeat tests were conducted due to the lack of portable medical records. And I think, Michael, you'd mentioned earlier one of the earlier speakers had some perspective on that as well, around the medical records and such, right? Maybe not.
I'm sorry. I apologize. I was helping somebody do something. What was the question?
No, I had mentioned some of the lack of portable medical records, and you'd spoken to Jeremy and I earlier about a speaker
yes.
that was talking about some of the medical records and things
yes,
earlier
Dr.
today.
Dr. John Halamka gave his presentation earlier today at from 1:15 to 2 o'clock, and you can download the audio for that presentation and look at the slides. But, yes, he talked extensively about the leadership that he's providing of getting an end-to-end open source, open standards solution for his patients
mm-hmm.
at the Deaconess Hospital.
Correct. Okay, good. I was just trying to show folks that, you know, we're actually really helping, you know, looking to help tie back in current solutions that are being put into place and we'll be able to, you know, really help promote those with our issuance of using them as case studies. So yeah, let me give you a little bit more about the VA. They chose to create their own open source record system. The cost of maintaining that system is about $87 per patient per year compared to to the $80 per repeat test that was taking place. So this is resulting in a 50% reduction in pneumonia hospitalizations alone. And they also reduced cost at about $40 million per year, and an estimated 6,000 lives were saved. So if some of our listeners out there have some additional case studies, please send them along. We have some another one that'll be, if we could move ahead to the Federal Aviation Administration. And by the way, I have put on these sites, on the slides, to get for more information, I've put some links on there as well for folks. So feel free to visit them and learn more. So with respect to our Federal Aviation Administration, some of the challenges they were facing were, modernizing their air traffic control software system. So they executed a major modernization in a third of the normally scheduled time by switching to open source. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that, as Jeremy was mentioning earlier, they were able to take and download the software, become familiar with it, and get comfortable with what they were going to be deploying. So in the 100 sites using this new system, the FAA has benefited from huge cost reductions and increases in capacity and efficiency. After the technical refresh, converting to industry standard hardware and open source software. And again, I'd like to stress industry standard hardware. Not some closed-sourced hardware. The FAA's cost of replacing each computer dropped from $25,000 to $3,000. So they also reported that their IT costs were cut in half, with a total savings of more than $15 million.
I would love to add something to the FAA case study because I'm familiar with it, but it also because it ties together something that Dr. David Upton said in his 9 o'clock session and something that I also referred to in my 2:15 talk, and that is many organizations fail to believe that information technology can actually help them achieve strategic objectives. And one of the reasons they fail to believe it is because their past history has been so miserable. When they hire some external consultant organization or some big systems integrator to go do some big 2 or 3 year plan, and 5 years later it's just a smoking hole in the ground. And what this FAA case study, which you just said, made so relevant is that while they had planned on an 18-month deployment, which was twice as fast as they had previous experience with, they actually finished it in 6 months, so they did it 300% faster. And one can dismiss a lot of protestations that something is impossible if you can simply do it in less time than it takes to argue about it. There are some other examples from the commercial aviation world. Emirates Airlines spent over 2 years planning to do a migration of their enterprise platform to a proprietary system, and then was convinced to go do it with open source, and it took them 6 months from the initial spark of maybe we should do it differently to a successful deployment. So they spent four times as long planning on an alternative as they did on implementation. And this is precisely when the government today needs to be able to respond to rapidly changing conditions, number one, needs to be able to, finally step up to a responsibility that has been ignored for many, many years. This speed of implementation that the FAA demonstrated with their air traffic control system is a really compelling reason, not only saving the money, not only improving the efficiency, but being able to get the job done is really the ultimate measure of federal responsibility.
If I could come in here, Michael, I don't know what it is about aviation. Maybe it's because that's such a safety critical thing, and it's usually run by engineers, that they find it a very easy task to adopt open source software. But there was recently a presentation at the Linux Foundation Collaboration Summit from the people who actually implemented the entire German federal air traffic control system, all on top of Linux and open source software. So whenever you're crossing German airspace, basically all of the air traffic control is being done by open source and Linux systems. When you can cross German airspace without the volcano getting in the way, of course. But it really is proof, I think, that security, reliability, and it tends to be the more technical agencies that kind of understand and believe the cost savings and efficiency that they can get first somehow. I think some of the less technical agencies have a harder time believing it. But I don't know whether it's in the Open Source for America's remit to talk about other government projects, but that I think that might be a very good one to link to in the future if we're allowed to sort of pull in other government successes. Because kind of governments, in my experience, governments like to talk to other governments. They don't kind of believe the commercial deployments of open sources. It's almost as though we were trying to sell them something.
No, that's actually right, Jeremy. And Open Source for America is really looking at helping the U.S. federal government, realize these the benefits. But like you were saying, many of our members, whether they be on our board, whether they be some of the companies, they're not all based here in the U.S. And there's a reason behind that. But, we've got we have companies like Canonical, who has Ubuntu. We have, a ForgeRock that is, it's a spinoff from a project that is no longer being supported by, because of the Sun acquisition, is no longer being supported. So, I mean, there's all kinds of reasons behind, having these projects open source so that they don't die on the vines. And they're not controlled just by, a corporation.
Yeah.
So if we could go to the next page, number 12, current efforts. So Open Source for America has issued three asks. We had a comprehensive open source memo. We'll clarify what we think are misconceptions around relevant law, which actually is encouraging the open source use. What we're seeing is government agencies tend to act with an abundance of caution during the procurement phase. Again, we're speaking to the choir here, but that seems to be the long tail of the process. And so with uniform policy guidance, we believe it will allow the agencies greater freedom to explore ways to fulfill their missions via the open source software. We also there's some inconsistent interpretations of the federal guidelines that for the creation, implementation, and distribution of government-sponsored open source software projects. And some, again, are, we're still repeating ourselves here a little bit, but, there was an interpretation that there was a lot of discouragement by the government around open source and the developers. And so what we're really looking at doing is to publish a common process for federal open source projects, a unified process, which we believe will eliminate the inconsistencies and clear the way for future projects. Our third current effort here is to educate program managers on the intellectual property stewardship. We believe that federal program managers need to be they need access to be able to learn more about intellectual property, so that the code written for an agency does not end up being owned and sold by a developer. The public, we feel, should maintain the software and have it publicly financed. So if we could go to the last slide here, what we're really wanting folks to do is to become members of Open Source for America. You know, join a working group in your area. We've got very cool, very active working groups around geospatial, education, healthcare. We're also, you know, looking and encouraging the government technology leaders in the discussion about the advantages of open source software. So please, you know, go and check out opensourceforamerica.org. And I guess, Jeremy, Michael, do you guys have anything else to add?
No, just to really back up your comments on especially education. I mean, this really should be a priority for us all. And we can save a lot of money by adopting open source software in the education area. And I think we can get a lot of efficiencies there. And essentially, we can make the federal government's dollars go further and service more kids and get a better educational system, which is, you know, as I have a four-year-old, I'm kind of concerned about.
Absolutely. Well, let me add a couple of things. One is we've heard a number of people today identify themselves as optimists, but at the same time, based on their experiences with open source, with Creative Commons, I also think they're realists. When people are reporting substantially better results, substantially more encouraging results, it doesn't take an optimist to look at great data and say, wow, you know, that's a good result. That being said, I do think that there are some people who, to help improve the government as it is today does require a certain amount of optimism. And for people who are such optimists, Open Source for America represents a place to be optimistic. The good news is that the amount of positive data, both in terms of case studies that have been published as well as case studies that one can find lying around, the opportunities are absolutely enormous. And so as president of the Open Source Initiative, which basically provides education and advocacy on open source in a general context, we support Open Source for America because we like to have somebody who speaks Washington's language on our side. And we at the OSI try to stay very neutral in those territories, but we're delighted to have a partner who is not afraid to set foot inside the Beltway.
Yeah, well, and it can, I mean, essentially, by joining and promoting with Open Source for America, you can amplify your voice. So if you're an open source fan or you believe in the development methodology, but essentially you don't know how to help promote the government to adopt some of these techniques and technologies, Open Source for America is just a great place to go to find like-minded people and to actually amplify your efforts by working together. We can do a lot more than we can by lobbying separately.
That is absolutely true. So on that note, I would like to close this session and begin the next.